I think we have one slide working, or one screen working. So those of you that are way over there, you got a choice. You can either scoot in and fill in some of these slots, or you can just put on your binoculars and hopefully see from where you're at. But we're going to look at Genesis, where we left off last week, should be where we're going to start. However, before we read that passage, before we get into that today, I'm going to have us, let's see if I know, this one looks a little different than the one. Yep, it works. Okay, I figured it out, I think. Okay, where's the laser? Is that, there we go. Pastor Bill shared this map with us last week, and we knew that Jacob was returning from Haran and had several days' journey. But before Laban met up with him was in this area right here. It says on this map, you can't probably read it, but Laban overtakes Jacob, and in that location. And so what we will be wrapping up with today takes place in that, and I should have put the map farther down in the slides, but this is your only chance you get to see the map today. So study it, burn that into your memory, and then we're going to be going on from there. But in order to set the stage for this a little bit, I'm going to recap some events in Jacob's life. Now, granted, we've spent a lot of time looking at Jacob and his life, and there's a lot of areas, a lot of issues that we've talked about that we're just going to skip. But I want to go back, and we're going to pick up in Genesis chapter 25, and starting with verse 27, and then I'm just going to kind of jump ahead. Hopefully I'll remember to tell you where I'm going. But in Genesis 25, verse 27, it says, when the boys grew up, we're talking about Jacob and Esau now, Esau became a skillful hunter and a man of the field, but Jacob was a peaceful man living in tents. And I want to spend this setting this stage when we talk about Jacob, and in a little bit I'll tell you what my purpose in doing this is. But notice here that it says that Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, a kind of the man's man, the he-man, the survivor type person that we would see today. The what? Yeah. And Jacob, it says, was a peaceful man living in tents. Now, this is from the NASB, and in the King James, it just says he was a plain man living in tents. If we look at the definition from the translation or the transliteration of the word, it's the word tam, which is the word for peaceful or plain. The definition means to be perfect or complete. Number B is the sound or wholesome. And number C is complete, morally innocent, having integrity. Now, A says that it is one who lacks nothing in physical strength, beauty, etc. Well, obviously, Jacob is not the physical strength, beauty person. The living in the tents doesn't necessarily mean he was a household boy all the time, but it's just in contrast to Esau, who was out in the field, probably out, you know, don't want to mess around with the sheep and the donkeys, and he's going to go out and hunt the wild game and spend his time out in the fields, where Jacob was content on being around the homestead, taking care of things, getting his background, but also probably it means as it's used here is that he was a wholesome or sound person, quiet sort of person, complete, morally innocent, having integrity. one who is ethically pure. Now, be careful. We've always spent a lot of time talking about Jacob being deceitful. But this is why I'm wanting to build on this passage. This same word that is used of Jacob is the same word that is used in Job. When it talks about Job being a blameless man, that word was translated blameless in Job chapter 1. In Job 8 and in 9, the man of integrity. That integrity is the same word that is translated from the same word that is used for Jacob in Genesis, and also guiltless. Now, my point in saying this is that we see that Esau sold to Jacob his birthright. When you look at the passage there, it was Esau that made the advance to give me some of that. I'm hungry, and I'll trade you my birthright. Esau then married two Hittite girls who caused issues with Isaac and Rebekah. And then it was Jacob deceived Isaac to receive the family blessing. And then that's in Genesis 21 or 27, verse 41. Now, I'm not excusing Jacob of his sin, his deceitfulness, his deceiving, his conniving. Yes?
But it was his mother that put him up to it, and he was honoring his mother.
That's correct. It was Rebecca was the one that started the issue, but it still doesn't mean, you know, when I'm building my case for the fact that Jacob was an honorable man, a righteous person, you know, the righteous person shouldn't give in to the deceitfulness. However, we all know, and my point here is that even the most honest, righteous person of integrity, we're still human. And the example here is that even the best of us sometimes have issues that I guess we would just call sin. But I wanted to point out that we often dwell on, or we even have sermons preached on, the deceitfulness of Jacob. And it's not trying to take away from anything that we've covered in the past here in this class, but I wanted to have us look at his general demeanor, Jacob's character, or his makeup. And it appears from as we continue on, we'll see that his makeup and his demeanor was along the lines of a righteous character, one that really was following after God in most cases. Now, we also see then that, let's see, I wanted to, 27:41. We see then, this is just kind of revisiting, it says, "So Esau bore a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, 'The days of mourning for my father are near. Then I will kill my brother Jacob.'" And my point here is that Rebekah and Isaac tell Jacob to go for two reasons. One, to be away from Esau and his wrath, and also Isaac's purpose was that he would find somebody to be his wife that is not of the same people of the neighborhood, going back again to the family from which they all came, from Abraham's family. Let's see, Genesis 28. I guess I'm getting ahead of myself here. 28:7-9, 7-9, it says, "Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Paddan Aram, or Haran, So Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan displeased his father Isaac, and Esau went to Ishmael and married, besides the wives that he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaiah. Now, this points out again that Jacob obeyed, as was mentioned earlier. Jacob was obeying his mother when he deceived. That doesn't give him a buy. Okay, he's still deceived. But Jacob was a character that was following after obedience. And I believe it reflects in the way that he responded to his parents. Esau married a daughter of Ishmael out of spite. First of all, he married from the Hittite families, or from the Hittites, two women, which didn't please mom and dad. And now, when he sees that in spite of what he did, Isaac is sending Jacob away to get a wife from the family back up in Haran. And so he gets upset with everything that's going on and then despitefully goes out and marries an Ishmaelite. Now, we don't know all the background here, but my point is Esau was just plain rebellious. Jacob was compliant and respectful. He was following after what his parents told him. He was probably more in tune with, and again, I'm reading between the lines, but he was probably more of a God-fearing person than Esau was. And I'll back that up a little bit here when we get into the next portion. On his way, Jacob experienced the ladder dream. We remember that from one of our previous, and I'm not going to read that. That's in verses 12 through the end of the chapter of 28. But when you look at that, you'll notice that this is the first example of God speaking directly to or revealing himself directly to Jacob and the plans that he had for Jacob. When you look at those passages in those verses in 28, God is reminding Jacob of the covenant he made with his grandfather Abraham, with his father Isaac, and he was reinforcing it. Now, what's interesting is if you do a word search on Jacob, there are, from this point on, a lot of the scriptures that refer to God's promises back to this family. It talks about his promises to Jacob almost as much as it does about his promises and his covenant to Abraham. It talks about the covenant to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then when he talks about the nation of Israel, many times God is saying about Jacob. So sometime when you have one of your little electronic devices and you can just do a word search on Jacob, take a look and look at all the places that the reference stops back at Jacob when God's talking about what he's doing with the nation. Also, God expresses, Jacob then during this event, after it was over, expressed fear and awe, or he acknowledged that he had been visited by Jehovah. Verse 16 says, Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it." And he was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place?" So Jacob recognizes God's visit and his speaking to him, also recognizes his promise, his covenant. And of course, we spent some time talking about the passage or the verses 20 through 22 where Jacob says, "If you do this, then I will." There are some commentators or some that say because of the conditional statement there, It could also be since. I'm not necessarily along that line. I would tend to think more along the line. Jacob is still in the area of, just like many of us, not fully trusting God. He's a follower of God. How many of us have become Christians, and yet when we deal with everyday things in our lives, we do it in our own strength? And yeah, God said, give it all over to me. God said, trust in me with all your heart, with all your, seek after me with all your heart, your mind, your soul. And we still have the tendency as humans to say, well, I know how to deal with this. I can take care of this. And so we shouldn't be too hard on Jacob saying, well, if God is with me, because God just got through saying, I'm going to be with you. Well, I'm spending too much time there. I wanted to move on. Upon arriving in Haran, and this is going to be real quick, in chapter 29, we see that Jacob was kind to Rachel. Again, it's an expression of his character. When he, now granted, it says that he saw Rachel and it was kind of like, wow, but by the same token, he did an act of kindness. And then we see that when he gets to Laban's house, it says that they spent some time at Laban's house before Laban then offers to pay him for his service. As long as you're going to stay here and you're going to do something, maybe he was doing some things while he was, it says that they were there about a month, and then Laban suggested that, why don't I pay you? Even though you're a relative, I'll pay you for your services. Now, it was Jacob then that made the offer to work for 7 years to marry Rachel. And then, of course, we see that Jacob was deceived. And the point here is, and we've talked about that before, the deceiver reaped what he sowed. Now, that I've been talking about Jacob's character being one that follows after God, and I still believe it was, but you don't get a buy just because you're always in the right mindset of following after God and getting things right again. Doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be free of the consequences. Okay? Here's a case where God was working in Jacob's life. God was growing Jacob. Jacob, and one of the growing issues in his life was, whoops, I got deceived. Wonder why that happened. Maybe he was thinking. But also, you notice that in that when the answer, when he found out that he'd been deceived, he did ask the question of Laban, why? But there's no indication that this was, he went into any hissy fit. Now, I know it would be very easy for me to, 7 years, and I was expecting this, and I got this. I don't know that I would be real calm, but we don't see anything in here other than he just says, why did you do this? And of course, here again, Laban explains that the culture was you don't put the younger before the older. Now, where have we heard that before? Okay? So not only did he get deceived, but he got deceived in the same manner in which he had taken the presumptive path with his brother Esau. Now, again, moving on, Jacob agreed then to another 7 years of labor. So now we're pushing at 14 years, and it says, we're not going to go through all the other things that went on, but Joseph was born, and when Joseph was born, he decided that it was time that he needed to go back to his father's home. Now you notice when you look in that passage in chapter 30, verses 25 and on, it just says that Joseph or Jacob decided that it was time to go back. And when he's confronted by Laban, we talked about the fact that Laban recognized God had been blessing him through Jacob's effort. We see that he uses a little flattery on Jacob. I don't know whether Laban was sincere or not, but at least he did recognize that God had been involved in this process. And then Jacob launches into how he had prospered Laban, and that he didn't have much when Jacob got there, and looked after stuff. He hadn't deceived Laban. He hadn't taken things that wasn't supposed to. Laban had prospered. And now Jacob's statement to Laban in chapter 30, verse 30, was that I need to provide for my own household. He's starting to look after the needs for his family, or he wants to. And maybe he was being a little melodramatic in his approach, but the point is Laban convinces him with the flattery and whatever, that if he stayed around, he could get, maybe build up his own 401k or whatever it was that he had to be working for his inheritance. Now, possibly his thought in going back to his father Isaac earlier or just prior to this was that, okay, he wasn't getting anything out of working for Laban. He did have that inheritance back at home. And so Laban now is laying out for him the opportunity to get some of his own, and so he sticks around. The agreement for building, he makes the agreement on how they're going to build up Laban's herds and also make provision for Jacob's herds or inheritance or his wealth. And then, of course, we saw that Laban and his sons are getting upset. And it's now that God speaks to Jacob. In verse 3 of chapter 31, Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you." This is now the second time that God has spoken directly to Jacob, but it's been over a little over 14 years. However, I still think this is part of, you know, Laban's or Jacob's learning to trust God. He consented to stay a little longer. And now God is telling him it's time to return to his father. Jacob also shares with his wives that he had served Laban faithfully and wholeheartedly, and yet Laban had been less than honorable to Jacob. Last week we considered the flight of Jacob returning to where we picked up on the map. But before we do that, I want us to look at... well, we have looked at Genesis 31, 6 through 7. This is where he's talking about being cheated by Laban or by his wife's father. And then we see that in 12 and or in 14 and beyond, that the daughters, or Rachel and Leah, agree with him that they had not had their wealth that they were supposed to be getting. And then going on into verse 24, now they've been traveling, and Jacob or Laban catches up with Jacob. And Now I would like to have us skip forward. Now we're at the passage that we were supposed to be dealing with. Actually, we started with this part last week. But looking at verse 36, we're going to read through the end of the chapter, actually on to verse 2 of chapter 32. Then Jacob became angry and contended with Laban, and Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my transgression? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? Though you have felt through my goods, what have you found of all your household goods? Set it here before me, my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two." In other words, now that you have caught up with me, made the accusations against me and my troop, show me what you found. What have we taken that didn't belong to us? Probably of the sheep and the herd and so forth. And he said, "Here, I'm giving you the opportunity to lay it out in front of me." It says that Jacob became angry and contended with Laban. Now, the word angry is, again, from the Hebrew, to be hot, furious, burned, become incensed, to be kindled. And then to contend is to conduct a case. Again, we've looked at this in the past, so I'm not going to keep on here too long. We're going to continue reading. But Jacob is making his case before Laban. "These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn of beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. You required it of my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was, by day the heat consumed me, and the frost by night, my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands, so he rendered judgment last night." Jacob is referring back to Laban did confess to Jacob that he was after him, probably had some evil intentions. And God spoke to Laban and said, "Don't speak good or bad." And then when you look at that passage that follows, Laban was trying not to be bad with his words, but he couldn't keep it totally. If you read that portion that follows there, he was still accusing Jacob of not being forthright with Laban. But Jacob says here in this passage, "God rendered judgment last night. I've been vindicated," so to speak. Jacob had been a compliant person. He had been a person who had, if you look at the past history, there is no indication that in the things that we were looking at, starting from the time of the two being born up until this point, where Jacob ever spoke back spiteful manner or a vindictive manner. And my point in what we've been looking at up to this point is that he'd had enough. Jacob's demeanor changed. He was now standing his ground. He had been a faithful steward. He had been the congenial one. He lost his composure. And he says, "God has seen my affliction. He rendered judgment last night." Even if we are recognized by others, when we do something, when we are faithful in our job, and as Christians we should be faithful with our job, with our responsibilities, We should be faithful because we should be serving the Lord and not men. But even if we don't get we look for recognition. I just this last week, the Chamber of Commerce, several people that I know personally got some awards from the Chamber of Commerce. And I sent them thank yous. By email. I said, I appreciate, congratulations, appreciate your efforts in the community. But if we don't get recognized, that doesn't mean that we should be, get grumpy about it. And we should still be thankful that God has been faithful to us and that our service is unto the Lord, and our conscience should stay pure. In other words, we should be doing it because it's the right thing to do, even if nobody else recognizes it. As Jacob recognized here, God was the one that made the judgment, brought the justice. And then we see that in verses 43 and on, that Laban answered and said to Jacob, "The daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne?" Laban can't defend his actions. He, in an awkward sort of way, he admits the desertion of his family. Remember earlier that Leah and Rachel had said, he's squandered our inheritance. He's not saved it for us. And now Laban is saying, these are my kids, these are my children. And Jacob had been concerned that if he'd stuck around too long, Laban was going to possibly take back his family by force and what they had. But now Laban is admitting his, in a kind of a roundabout way, his mistakes. And so he says, "Let us come, let us make a covenant, you and I. Let it be a witness between you and me." Then Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. This is in verses 44 and on. "And Jacob said to his kinsmen, 'Gather stones,' so that they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Now Laban called it Jegershahdatha, but Jacob called it Galeed." Now this is both Aramaic and Hebrew for the same meaning, and that is a heap of witness or a separation. "And Laban said, 'This heap is a witness between you and me this day,'" a separation between the two. Laban was going to go back his direction. Jacob was going to continue on to his home country. And this memorial, this is a sign of the separation. The two are parting ways. They're going their separate directions. And therefore it was named Galeed, and Mizpah, for he said, "May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another. If you mistreat my daughters or take wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. Behold," and Laban said to Jacob, "Behold this heap, and behold the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness, and I will not pass by this heap to you for harm, and you will not pass by this heap and this pillar to me for harm." Now it is interesting here that Laban is the one that has, by all practical purposes, been the offender in the way that he treated Jacob these 20 years. And finally, when he admits it, now he turns around and says, "Oh, and by the way, part of this covenant is you make sure you take care of my daughters and my grandkids and their families. Don't marry anybody else." As though he maybe has earned respect to have that influence into Jacob's life, which so far to this point he hadn't. And yet he does. Jacob agrees to it. And then in verse 53, the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his kinsmen to the meal. And they ate the meal and spent the night on the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. We see here that there is a sacrifice and a meal of reconciliation. After all the battering back and forth and the Jacob having his say finally, which all indications were that probably took a lot of gumption, so to speak, to stand his ground and tell Laban, you know, go away, leave me alone. They did make peace. They sat down. They had a meal, which is usually a symbol or a sign of reconciliation and patching stuff up. And the same way should be for us, is that we aren't going to be, because we're people, because we're humans, even though we're Christians, we're not going to be without contentions, even amongst our family, our church family, our church friends. But the example here is that get the stuff aired out, get your issues, forgive, forget, sit down, and fellowship. And then we see that Laban bids farewell to his daughters and his grandsons. It says that he kissed his sons and his daughters. The word son there can mean any of the offspring. So going down to grandsons and great-grandsons and granddaughters and so forth. And now we see in chapter 32, verses 1 and 2, now Jacob went on his way. The angels of God met him, and Jacob said when he saw them, this is God's camp. So he named this place Mahanaim. And I just wanted you to see here that when Jacob was leaving the area, it was angels that came and ministered to him and the voice of God through the dream. And now as he is returning, it's angels again ministering to Jacob as he's coming back to his family. And another observation here is this is the last time that we see any of the Hebrews going up to Haran or back to their old family to get wives or interacting with the pile of stones separated them, and that's the last that God had used the families in Haran to be part of the Hebrew nation. Walter.
I was just wondering if we could use Genesis 31:53 as a proof text for going back to why it appears to me that Abraham came from a line of at least God-fearers.
That's a good point.
Why they kept going back to them.
Yep.
Yeah.
The verse 53 that Walter's talking about, it says, the God of Abraham, this is part of their covenant or their agreement, the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, who was the father of all of their kindred, and the God of their fathers judged between us. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. And so that I think is a good observation, that their lineage, whether they're, you know, following after their understanding of the God that brought Abraham and his line, it was still the same God that Nahor observed. We don't know to what extent, because the scripture focuses on Abraham and his descendants. But there's...
Also, their father. I mean, I don't know if you can use this as a proof text to say when Abraham was called out of Ur, they were followers of God.
Right. It's... We don't know, but it's very good observation. Well, it's time is up. Our Heavenly Father, I thank you for the lesson that you've given us today. I pray that you would help us to recognize